We interrupt this broadcast to bring you this special message. How's it going, eh? Today's movie on the Universal National Network is a classic, starring the two comedic geniuses of North American cinema from the 20th century, Bob and Doug McKenzie. Entitled Strange Brew, it chronicles the heroic adventures of two latter-day Renaissance men, or, to use the correct 20th century terminology, hosers. We give it three thumbs up.
American media is a business, and it has a mission. Not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men and indoctrinate citizens with a capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Friday, June 3rd, 2005. Friday, you made it through the week. Not a problem, man. You just got to make it through the weekend, and then Monday will be here. But you have 2 days reprieve, hopefully, coming your way. Unless, of course, you have 7 part-time jobs, like the majority of the population. This is Newsreel, your daily report as the woke counterculture defeats the evil of core political tyranny. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech day, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my super lead Hacksaw Live Journal at sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. And that this is also should be known, be decreed hereby that here to where all concerning thoughts are a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Radio306.com, and OspreyRadio.info. And then you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way you see fit. You can, roadcast it if you want to, but we'll be getting to that in just a little bit. First, we got some feedback to get through. Dear Sean, here's some feedback for you and for Newsreel about what things your show and various other people have done for me. I've discovered you guys back in early 2002 when a college buddy of mine, nicknamed Pizza Boy, introduced me when he was playing one of your Burning Man episodes on one of the network computers. Ooh, in college. I was intrigued and spent bloody hours downloading each of the episodes via dial-up until I had all of them. Then, after watching them, I went and listened to the entire Sean Kennedy Show archive, did those mixes for you back in the day, which I had a lot of fun creating, and went back to listening to all of the What the Hell archives. I've listened to the advice you've given people over the years, the common sense on how we should live and how we should treat other people, who to be wary of, etc. Last year, though, I think a combination of several things really hit home to me about how we should treat our own bodies. First off, back in the first portion of 2004, my father died of a heart attack in a local hospital, entirely the fault of the National Health Service. He was never one for healthy eating and only took a few months before it really hit home and I changed my diet or I'd end up like him. I lost 3.5 stone. Wow, that must have been quite the withdrawal. In 6 months, just by cutting out absolute crap that I was eating. More recently, since you started Newsreel, I've been able to listen to you nearly every day. I paid heed to what you've been saying about taking care even more to what we eat and how toxic our food has become. As such, I've nearly completely eradicated meat from my diet and my dairy intake is nil. Careful substitution of each foodstuff has enabled me to not lose any nutrition during the switch, and I found vegan substitutes for cheese that we have over here at works very well. It even melts on pizza. Thanks a lot for what you guys do. Keep it up, and I'll do what I can do to keep the Rant Radio spirit flying in this little country of Scotland. And that, of course, was from Sabo. Thank you very much, man. It's nice to know that we are making a difference. And occasionally, you know names, but you don't really know how, you found out about the show or what else has been going on with you and how it's helped you in your life. And I'm glad that if it's helped you health-wise, and, well, there's really not much better than that. Because at the end of it all, hey, if you've got your health, you've got, you don't have much to worry about. Next piece of feedback. Dudes! About the question as to why people ask why people are vegans. It is because it is so foreign to them. As Sean said, food is a very sacred thing. Me and my lady were talking the other day about how eating has become an event of artistic creation, social interaction, and a pastime. Don't get me wrong, McShitty-ass cardboard dipped in grease is not any of those things, but it is But that is the type of shit that many anti-vegans or vegan curious eat far too often and enjoy. That sounds like a personal ad, eh? I'm vegan curious. I think they are asking out of pure curiosity and maybe wondering if they're missing out in some way. But alas, most will never hear the magic words as such, as for some, they might be, it gives me a hard-on for hours. Every woman wants me. That may change their minds. I see, yes. Well, if you are a vegetarian, you do get a hard-on for hour, and every woman wants them. As a matter of fact, every time I walk around with Sim, it's pretty pathetic, because it's like, you know that that there's, like, women who, like, throw themselves at Sim, you know, like, they run and stuff, and a lot of the close-quarters combat techniques I've had to learn because I've gone up against chicks who are, like, Lucy Liu grade, you know, ninjas, trying to get at Sim, you know, because he is the most eligible bachelor in the world, you know, really. Looking online, and I've checked, and as a matter of fact, I've had a number of people check, and I honestly do believe that Sim is the most eligible bachelor probably on the entire internet. I don't know for sure, but I can't seem to find anyone else who's, you know, better looking and single and a media mogul. I mean, my God, it's a mystery to me why, you know, I don't know how it's possible he's been able to stay single as long as he has. I really don't, but, you know, provided that I can keep running defense, we may have to have more wogs picking up firearms and doing an all-point defensive around him as he moves, because it's getting really sick now. We need, like, striker-armored vehicles just to get Sim to and from the studios. It's insane. They just want to know, so they can maybe, getting back to letter here, carrying on, they just want to know so maybe they can see if it is right for them without trying it. And I must apologize for beating a dead horse on this, as you guys stipulated. No more vegan questions or shoutcast. But this is not a question, this is a reply to an inquiry. I will never speak of this topic again unless it is thrust upon me by an army of angry carrots. Keep the goodness coming, Digitus, logging off. Yes, it's true. Being a vegetarian is something that, you know, I can't seem to do it. I don't know why, but, like, I'll bust out every couple of, you know, weeks or whatever. I think that if you eat a low-meat diet, that's almost, you know, if you can't pull off the vegetarian thing, any time you can, like, cut down your meat consumption, that's always a good thing as far as I'm concerned. Because, I mean, even if you are not vegetarian, you got to admit, dude, we eat way too much meat in this country. And we eat really shitty meat, like processed meat and stuff like that. That stuff just, you know, causes a 7,000% increase in your chances of pancreatic cancer. So, you know, and I'm not even making that stat up. We covered that a few days ago. It's just absolutely sick. Another piece of feedback here. Dear Sean, with regards to recent shutting down of the elite torrent sites. Now, these are the BitTorrent sites that, and of course, you know, the Nazis down there in the States are like, oh, no, we got to have that. Can't have free distribution of media. No, we got to shut that down. I've been wondering about the possible legal predicates from various other market sites. Suddenly, I feel stupid. For example, there's a Swedish site where people can exchange goods, and apparently one of the buyers got stiffed by one of the other sellers and tried to put the blame on the site owners. The judge came to the conclusion that the site is not responsible for what the users are doing. Okay, well, that's cool. They merely act as an intermediary between the users and did not do anything illegal. So you can even sell illegal stuff over such a site. At least the site owners are not responsible. I guess the same thing would apply to sites such as eBay, right? I mean, that makes sense. So in that case, how come it doesn't apply to the torrent sites? They don't deal with any illegal goods, but only help users find each other. So what the users do with the connection is up to them. So why are they taking down when they run a business just as legit as that of eBay? Is my logic making any sense? Ion. Yes, Ion, your logic is making sense, but you're making that deadly and critical error of assuming that the world is not completely fucking insane. That's something I picked up when I was in the Army. You know, never try to defend something because it just happens to be true. Oh, no, 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 no. Common sense is anything but. You know, there's all kinds of guys, and anybody who's ever been in the service will tell you that it's like, oh, yeah, the first thing you got to throw right out the window is any kind of common sense if you're ever in any sort of a military role or even a government role, for that matter. I'll stretch this out even to government, okay? Nobody cares about common sense, okay? The legal system is just there to be an obstacle to give the government something to, you know, go around and employ lawyers for. So it gives the appearance that they have some sort of, you know, code or ethics or something like that, when in fact it's all just a big sham. On to sort yourself out. Hey, Sean, I'm thinking about doing something drastic, but I don't know if I should. I've recently been discovering some very simple FM transmission gear, such as I should be able to plug a circuit into the line out of my sound card and broadcast with up to a 3 to 5 watt station. I live in the middle of Kansas, so Fed monitoring is probably minimal. Also, I'm 15. The only thing I fear is a takedown. My family isn't rich, so a fine from the SCV would probably fuck me over pretty good. I really want to do this because I feel this is one way I could actually make a difference. But alas, the federal pound me in the ass prison is not an appealing idea. Any advice would be well received. Stay hard, Nix. Okay. Number one law regarding something like this. If you cannot do the crime, okay, actually, I screwed that up. I even had a great intro and everything. If you cannot do the time, do not do the crime. It is just that simple. Now, in this email here, you said that you're worried about the FCC busting you. So with a situation like that, which could be easily backtracked, do not broadcast. Seriously. It's not your house. Okay, you're 15. Go to school. Upgrade your gray matter so that you can build all of the cool devices that we need in the future. You want to make a difference? You're not going to make a difference with an FM transmitter in Kansas. I'm sorry. Not to be a pain in the ass or anything, but you're really not. You know, if you want to spread the virus, that's fine. You know, tell other people. Get involved with other stations. I'm not trying to just push Rant Media here, but find something you believe in and then get behind it that way and move about it in legal means. Right now, it's getting really, really dangerous, and there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, trying to crack down on individuals, and if there's just some kid broadcasting on an FM transmitter, you bet you're going to get taken down. So I vote no. Do not do this. This is a dumb idea. Although you have the technology, that's great. Don't use it. The risk is not worth the reward. Okay, you've got to bear that in mind. It's not like it was a few years ago, buds. But I do appreciate you wanting to make a difference. I do. I just want to make sure that you don't get fined or thrown in jail because of ideas you got from me. Okay, the number one idea you got to think of is you've got to go right. You've got to think tactically. Okay, that's the number one thing. Critical thinking here, all right? Is risk versus reward, and again, if you cannot do the time, do not do the crime. And quite clearly, buddy, you're 15. You can't do the time. So just, that's cool. Your heart's in the right place. Just don't do that. Learn. Okay, learn everything you can about books. Learn everything you can about broadcasting. Learn everything you can about how information travels, and you will get stronger. If you really want to be hardcore, once again, Sean Pimping Robotics. Learn robotics. It's the future. Another piece to sort yourself out. Hey, Sean, this is for my friend. He has a daughter, and she lives with her mother. The daughter went to her dad's house for the weekend and refused to go back to home to her mother because her mother is dating this guy who beats the daughter. What can he do? These are great. I love these emails where they talk about children getting beaten. I love that shit. Okay, well, without me flying straight off the candle, the first thing you do is you call the cops. That's right off the top before anything else happens. You go right, phone the police. My daughter claims she's being beaten at the house, yada, 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 yada. If the cops can't help you, and after you exhaust all the resources with the cops and follow all the leads the cops tell you to, then you call social services, if you do have social services in your country. If social services can help you and you still feel like your child is being beaten and there's nothing that the cops or social services can do, call his fucking neighbors. Make sure that you go, you know what, drop by the house. Actually, don't call. Just drop by the house of his neighbor and say, listen, you know what, you don't know me, but I'm the father of this little girl. She's been showing up with bruises. I'm really sorry. Can you just keep an eye out the window to see if you happen to catch him hitting her? Because I'm really afraid and just, you know, whatever. That's the other way to go. That's really drastic, but that's something you can do. It also fucks up his reputation as well as protects your child. But you want to be really sure, I should pre-stipulate, that you want to be absolutely fucking certain that she is in fact being beaten. Look for bruising and shit like that. Or just be certain, because you're, you know, it's your child, so you've got to trust your child or know your own child, right? And if none of that works, call the Pope. I don't know. You know, I have no idea what you do, but the number one thing you've got to call on is your own responsibility as a father. And from there, you know, don't take the law into your own hands, because if you do, well, that would be bad, because we're not supposed to take the law into our own hands, no matter what. That's what we're not supposed to do, because you wouldn't want to do that, because that would be bad, you know? Yeah. Into the news. Rant Radio Roadcasting? Question mark? Now, this has been around for a while, but I guess it's starting to hit mainstream. Researchers at Carnegie Mellon University are developing an ad hoc network system for cars that would allow any driver to broadcast music to any other vehicle within a 30-mile radius. Sweet. Developed by a group of current and former master's students at the Human-Computer Interaction Institute, the Roadcasting Project would allow drivers to stream their MP3 music collections by Wi-Fi or similar technology to any other vehicle within range that is equipped with compatible hardware or software. Well, that's just sexy. The system, still largely theoretical, will also feature a collaborative filtering mechanism that compares the music in recipients' collection to that of the broadcasters. The filter will pump out a mix of songs matching the listener's tastes. Now, that I'm not too keen on, or I'd rather just broadcast and you have to put up with it. What's really cool about this is while you're busy / driving, Roadcasting will just pick songs that you enjoy. Now, this trend that they got going on here where it's just songs that you enjoy, I'm not really too sure I like that. I've never really liked that. I'd rather be exposed to foreign music I've never heard before, and even music I don't enjoy, because that way you enjoy the songs you do enjoy more. This is according to Mathilde Pignall, one of the Roadcasting developers. And then it will let you influence the songs with your musical taste without you having to do anything. Yes, but I like doing things. Roadcasting was commissioned by a major automaker looking for applications to make use of mobile ad hoc networks that will be included in production cars within the next few years. A major automaker, in quotes, same way you do it in Fight Club. Pignall would not say which company the team had worked for, but Carnegie Mellon researchers have a history of working with General Motors on their so-called cars of the future. Aha! GM. According to Dan Benjamin, a senior analyst with ABI Research, several automakers and the Department of Transportation may implement mobile ad hoc networks as early as 2007. We need to take this over. Rand needs to get in on this one, because, you know, I'm sure that if we had enough of these listeners in the city with these things, we could actually take over the entire auto networks. What a great idea. I mean, I still want to do my, road warrior mass trip around the country. That's something I'd love to get going on there. But that's one of those logistical nightmares that just are a problem to try to set up. You know, it's hard to get a whole bunch of people together and do a North American lap. That was my big concept plan that I wanted to do. I wanted to get everyone together and just drive around America. Do it once a year. Take about a month or however long it would take and just do a lap. And every year you do another lap. And however many vehicles come with you, eventually within 5-6 years you'd have a convoy of these crazy vehicles like art cars and whatever driving around America. And I don't just mean America. I mean like North America, down through the States, up through Canada, so that we keep like that whole concept of a continent. Freedom as movement. You know what I mean? That's what I'm talking about here. And I think it's a great idea. Maybe we'll make it happen. Maybe we should do it as a motorcycle gang. I don't know. What the hell? We'll see what's up. I mean, you know, there's no telling what the hell I'm going to do in any given moment in time. But I seem to be some successful on some, you know, front. And besides, any man who could design a live journal website as sexy as mine, you got to know that any project I'm involved with is only going to be of the highest possible caliber. In brain implant news. Now, of all the tech that's coming down the pipe, the brain implant shit, it just, you know, really just makes my nose foam. It really does. You know, I'm blowing blood bubbles with my nose right now as I read this. Robert Fischel says inventing things is a two-stage process. Well, I think it's more than a two-stage process, but that's fine. Stage one, everything says it's impossible, or everyone says it's impossible, he explains. Stage two, they say the solution was obvious all along, which is true. I guess that's what they do. Rant radio will never work 5 years later. Fischer would know. He's a 76-year-old inventor behind nearly 200 medical device patents, many of which no one thought would work, including an insulin pump implant for diabetics and two of the world's best-selling coronary stents. Stents? Nearly three decades ago, Fischel's designs were not only revolutionized by the way pacemakers were made, but rendered drug treatment heart fibrillation a thing of the past. Wow. So his inventions revolutionized the industry. So this guy knows his shit. All right, he's been doing it for a long time. What Fischel did for the heart, he now hopes to do for disorders of the mind. He believes that rather than prescribing pills, doctors will soon affix computerized implants into the skulls of patients stricken with everything from depression to obsessive compulsive disorder to migraines, Parkinson's disease, and Alzheimer's. So basically what he's saying here is anything that's wrong with your head, he's going to talk about making an implant for. The brain is an electrical machine, he said. Neurons communicate using electrical signals. We can make implantable program devices to see those signals, stimulate the problem areas, and make it better. Fischel, a physicist who once designed satellites for NASA, sees no problem with the notion of large swaths of the population walking around with battery-operated circuits in their head. The concept, no doubt, would be a leap for patients, many of whom fear the possibility of surgical mistakes, infection, or long-term effects. Not surprisingly, Fischel thinks of drug therapy for neurological disorders as inelegant. Medical devices are better than pharmaceuticals because there are fewer unknowns, fewer side effects, he said. Drugs affect every cell of the body. When we play with electrical signals in the brain, we're not interfering with the heart, the stomach, or the intestines. These devices will have a tremendous effect on what can be done. In 5 years, this will be a multi-billion dollar business. Oh my God, that would scare me so bad. Now, the reason why is, where are you? You know, at what point are you? At what point do you have free thought? You know what I mean? Like, should you be able to be manic if you want to be? Realistically, with one of these devices, they can make you fall in and out of love. If they can make you be less compulsive and obsessive, then that means they can make you be more obsessive and compulsive. You know, and the application for marketing for that is somewhat obvious. So it sort of, shall we say, give me reason for pause. You know, I don't care what's wrong with me. I'm not putting a chip in my head. I'm sorry, no. No one in my family's had a chip in their head, and I don't need a chip in my head. If I'm going to put a chip in my head, it should be something that doesn't regulate how I think. Maybe some external memory mods might be nice. Maybe the ability, you know, to link into the internet through a different visual center cortex so you don't even have to use your eyes. It just uses, like, basic imaging so you have, like, another set of optic nerves. Close your eyes and you can use, like, some sort of dream interface to log on. You know, that stuff, okay, well, maybe. You know. Or even if, you know, there's a 50% chance of survival, but, you know, I got superpowers. Sure, I do that too. What the hell? But the thing is, I'm not going to try to allow other people to regulate my thought patterns. What are you, out of your fucking mind? How can you possibly... Well, you know, we deem... Who gives a fuck what you deem, dude? Dude, we're all individuals. Okay, everyone on a very genetic level is absolutely 100% different. We're all unique. Okay, so no one's going to think the same, even if they say they think the same. So don't go telling me that you're going to start putting implants in people's head to alter how the fuck people think. That's just nuts. Doesn't make sense. In censorship news, and I got this from Sumerian, Ontario's film reviewers will soon be putting away their censored stamp for good. Oh, that's nice for film, eh? Under the Film Classification Act, which passed final reading yesterday, only films found to breach the criminal code will be banned from the province. The criminal code, so that's like snuff movies, all that kind of stuff. Films will be now classified up to the most restrictive R rating unless they're deemed illegal. So if it's porn, it's R. Almost 14 months ago, Ontario's Superior Court ruled that the Film Review Board's authority to approve and censor films was too broad and violated freedom of expression. Wow, that's pretty cool. I guess people in Ontario are getting their shit together, even though they got that stupid pitbull ban on. Consumer and Business Services Minister Jim Watson has been pushing for a national rating system to eliminate the need for each province to put its own ratings on movies. Okay, well, shouldn't you be behind something a little bit more poignant than that? But I guess that's okay. The new act also makes video games ratings mandatory. Oh, good. And enables police to impose fines on stores that rent or sell adult-rated games to minors. This is not about censorship. It's about information and education, said Watson. What? That doesn't even make sense. These games are so violent, you wouldn't want a 9-year-old playing the game. Well, don't tell me what I do and do not want. Maybe I'm a weirdo and I want my 9-year-old playing Soldier of Fortune. Now, granted... Even when I played Soldier of Fortune, I was kind of going, wow, man, you know, I don't think I'd want my kids playing this. But, you know, if the game is called, you know, Mercenaries Playground of Destruction, chances are you're not going to want your child, you know, sort of playing the game, kind of using some common sense here. Maybe I'm way out to lunch on that one. In Costs of Secrecy News... I got this from the Secrecy News newsletter from Stephen Aftergood. If you do a search for Stephen Aftergood or Secrecy News, you'll be able to find it's an email subscription. It's a fantastic newsletter. Gives you lots of insight. Executive branch agencies, listen to this, spent an unprecedented $7.2 billion to secure classified information last year. So $7.2 billion just to maintain a database that they can't maintain, according to a new report from the Information Securities Oversight Office. It was an 11% increase over the preceding year. $7.2 billion on secrecy. $7.2 billion. Jesus Christ. Correct me if I'm wrong, but how many people out there think you could probably build yourself a whole new information infrastructure for $7.2 billion? In addition, $823 million was spent to protect classified information held in industry for a total of $8 billion. Among the major drivers for sharp escalation in costs, the ISOO report said, is the ongoing construct for a new the on was the on, were ongoing construction of the new sensitive compartment information facilities, SCIFs, secure communication systems, and the new continuity of operations sites. Interesting. Sensitive compartmented information facilities. I wonder where that's located and where we can get more of that. Furthermore, I wonder how we can get in there. I'm sure, you know, they probably only got like a guard dog or something. This $7.2 billion figure represents the costs incurred by 41 executive branch agencies, including intelligence agencies other than CIA, which considers its costs classified. Jesus Christ. So there's 41 executive branch agencies? I didn't even know you had 41 agencies. What the fuck do you need 41 different Secret Service agencies for? The copy of the 2004 report on cost estimates for security classification activities is available off of my site. Warning, it is a PDF. So if you get that, you're going to be downloading a PDF. But there it is. 41 executive branch agencies. You know, Canada has like one. Granted, we only got like 32 million people or something like that. But still, you know, holy crap, how many Secret Service agencies do you need in the country? I don't even think China's got that many. In data theft news. Now listen to this one. This one's pretty wild. You know, it's pretty sad when you put the spin on an article the way they're doing the spin on this one here. Investment bank UBS has lost an investigation after a disk reckoned, I can't believe that they used the word reckoned here in a tech story, reckoned to contain sensitive client data went missing. So, and a disk went missing. The lost drive held data. You ready for this one? So investment bank UBS lost a disk. The lost drive held data from the bank's Tokyo share trading division. Does anybody see a problem here? Raising fears that confidential trading histories from a bank's corporate clients may be discovered, the Times reported. Japanese regulators told the paper they took the leak extremely seriously. Japan's financial services agency was told about the missing disk last week, although it is unclear when the disk went missing. Theories abound. The disk went missing during the course of a software upgrade between the bank's Tokyo and Hong Kong offices. Although earmarked for destruction, the disk remains unaccounted for. Although the metal case that once contained the disk is understood to have been retrieved, the storage machinery inside was gone. Holy crap. It is not known whether the disk has fallen to the hands of anyone outside the bank, the Times report said. Well, I would say that's pretty confidently a yes. They're just saying, we don't know if anyone got it, but it's not here. Well, come on, guys. The client data would normally be saved onto corporate servers rather than the desktops, but UBS is refusing to take chances. What do you mean you're refusing to take chances? You lost a fucking hard drive loaded with data. How can you screw that up? The bank says it's launched a probe into the disk's disappearance. Like, great spin, guy. We weren't compromised. We're just inept. That's our problem. Yeah, we're just fucking stupid. You know, you've had data theft. Okay, if you show up and bank information on a hard drive is physically missing, what do you suppose the chances are that shit didn't just walk away? Oh, it was a cleaning lady. You know, my God, how easy is it to walk in and walk out of your place with info? You know, we'll just swing on by and pick up all the credit card information or current, you know, trades going on in the stock exchange. None of that shit's sensitive, is it? Nobody minds, you know? I mean, realistically, you don't even got to worry about hackers. I mean, these corporations are going to fuck themselves right over. I can't believe this. How incredibly inept to physically lose a hard drive from a stock exchange bank. Like, what the hell? Where the fuck's your head? Now, this is a pretty nice piece of kit, and I would generally think that this is a handy piece of gear to have in everybody's house. A silence generator. This got sent to me by Dead Code, by the way. Very, very cool. Where were we here? Cyberpunk silence generator. There we are. Lost my place for a moment there. The two people in an office were having a tete-a-tete, but it was impossible for a listener standing nearby to understand what they were saying. The conversation sounded like a waterfall of voices, both tantalizing, familiar, and yet incomprehensible. The cone of silence, called Babel, is actually a device composed of a sound processor and several speakers that multiply and scramble voices that come within its range. About the size of a clock radio, the first model is designed for a person using a phone, but other models will work in an open office space. The voice scrambling technology used in Babel was developed by Applied Minds, a research and consulting firm founded by Danny Hills, a distinguished computer architect, and Bran Farron, an industrial designer and Hollywood special effects wizard. Babel, which is intended to function as a substitute for walls and acoustic tiling, is an example of a new class of products that uses computing technology to shape sound. Already on the market are headphones that can cancel extraneous noises and stereo systems that can direct sound to a particular location. The system will be introduced in June by Sonar Technologies. So we're getting more and more counter-intrusion techniques available for those of us out there that are educated and are able to get the tech. Notice how that works? So they're already keeping it so that unless you have technical knowledge, you're not going to be able to pick up one of these devices. But of course, everyone who has technical knowledge that could be considered covert, could be considered useful, could be considered that of a hacker, is now getting labeled a terrorist. Isn't that really clever how they do that? Now, personally, I think a device like this is pretty neat. It's pretty interesting. You could probably achieve just as much with a radio set on static or music playing in the background. You speak low rather than just having to spend money on a product like this. Furthermore, Having a device record your voice and spit it back out at you is very confusing. Don't believe me? Make a recording and try to say something while listening to yourself speak. It's very, very hard. That's why I can barely ever listen to the show. Aside from the fact that, you know, I'm shy. But, you know, generally, I would say that there's definitely going to be a call for stuff like this. It'll be going more and more and more until eventually we're going to have, you know, Thermoptic Cam readily available to everyone through overcoats, just like they did with that one piece of kit in Japan. Incidentally, I still haven't gotten any mail from people from Japan yet, so if we got anybody over there who can get us some port for some Thermoptic Cam, I want to make me a Thermoptic Cam overcoat. That'd be sexy. Now, we got some recommended reading by server. Now, this website here is some rabidly conservative, you know, website that's took the 15 most, you know, took the 10 most harmful books of the 19th and 20th century. The 10 most harmful books. Now, up near the top, of course, was Mein Kampf, which they say was a terrible book, and it is. It's really poorly written. And, you know, but it's complete crap. You know, I mean, the book is full of crap, but you need to read it. You got to read it so you know what these idiots in the white supremacist world are thinking. That shit's like the Bible to them. You know your enemy's thoughts, right? So if you want to defeat the white supremacists, you're going to have to read Mein Kampf. I'm sorry, because that's where they're getting their data from. And if you can defeat Mein Kampf, then you're going to be able to defeat the white supremacists because that's their source. You see what I mean? So Human Events was the name of the website, but they asked a panel of 15 conservative scholars and public policy leaders to help compile a list of the 10 most harmful books of the 19th and 20th centuries. Each panelist nominated a number of titles and then voted on a ballot, including all books nominated. A title received a score of 10 points for being listed number one by the panelists, 9 points for being listed number two, etc. Appropriately, the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels earned the highest aggregate scoring, the number one listing. You know, wow. If anyone has PDFs of these books, please send them to me, because I haven't actually got any of them. I don't even have a copy of Mein Kampf. I've got an audio copy of it that I'm going to be using for some audio stuff I'm doing and background noises for core political shit and all that kind of jazz. But if you've got a PDF of any of these books, please send it my way, because, you know, I'd like to have... Because when they start burning books, obviously, these are going to be the first 10 they use to light the fire. They've even done so much as said so. So, you know, my number one idea is to preserve knowledge and understanding and information, and, you know, books are a great way to do that. Won't be long now, man. Won't be long before books turn into hard currency. Hard to copyright a book, I'll tell you. Now, I got a CIA update for everyone out there. Now, everyone, I didn't know this, but did you know that the CIA has an entire, like, covert operations military base? It's a place called Harvey Point, and Pig Monkey sent me this. The Harvey Point facility was established in World War II as an operating base for blimps conducting anti-submarine surveillance in the Atlantic coast. It's used by the CIA's Directorate of Operations for personnel training in explosives, paramilitary combat, and other clandestine warfare techniques. Very interesting. Specifically, the point is where hardcore paramilitary ops are often worked on. The farm teaches basics and relatives to work done at the point and the paramilitary perspective. A course called AET, or Applied Explosive Techniques, is just an example. U.S. Navy SEALs are frequently trained on the course instruction. A group called SAD, or Special Activities Division, which is part of the DS&T, teaches many of these courses as well. SAD, S-A-D, is an office devoted to sabotage techniques and blowing things up. How sad. They run training all the time, and they're responsible for mining all the harbors down south about 10 years ago. SAD also runs EOD courses for the Secret Service. Within the CIA's Directorate of Operations, the areas are broken into the following organizational structures, divisions and staff and branches, respectively. There is the PM branch, or the paramilitary branch, and the staff is called the Special Activities Staff, or the SAS. Ah, I see. The Special Activities Staff is on par with the CAG, Combat Applications Group, formerly Delta. Ah, I see. So Delta Force is now called Combat Applications Group. And DEV Group, the Naval Spec War Development Group for SEAL Team 6. As far as operational ability and missions profile, it's considered a special missions unit, and is carried out special collection activities, sabotage, friendly personnel, military recovery, threat personnel, snatches, BDA, CD ops raids, hostage rescue, and other activities as developed by the president. And that all goes on at this place called Harvey Point. Now, I did not know that. I did not know that, but there's a lot of very interesting information on the site so that you can know just what exactly the government is gearing up for. And it's handy to see their training facilities to see just how far they are willing to go, you know? And it makes me wonder sometimes. Now, you want to talk about the core politicals. What about the cop politicals and the MPAA? The last thing I want is the Motion Picture Association of America getting together with the cops. Because, well, I'd like to keep a division between policing and corporations. That's just me, though. The Motion Picture Association of America said Tuesday that it will fund the installation of 10 new surveillance cameras in downtown Los Angeles, ostensibly to catch the ne'er-do-wells who are selling counterfeit DVDs on the street. Do you mean to tell me that does... But don't worry, it will be the city police department watching the closed-circuit screens, not Hollywood piracy enforcers. I presume that the resolution on the new cameras will be good enough to detect the subtle differences between actual counterfeits and used DVDs, which are illegal to sell under the first sales doctrine. I don't understand how you could actually do that with a camera, because even up close you can, and actually looking at the CD sometimes, you can hardly even tell. But why stop there? Since Hollywood is putting up the $186,000 US to set up the pole-mounted cameras, studios should own the copyright to the resulting videos. Just think of the opportunities for the new reality TV shows, live from the gritty streets of LA, or pay-per-bust webcams. Perfect for a nation riveted by Cops reruns and OJ's slow-speed Bronco chase. Who said Hollywood was technologically behind the times? Well, you know, there's something to be said for having some cameras around, I suppose. But don't piss on my back and tell me it's raining by saying that, you know, we're going to mount these cameras on poles to help cast piracy. No, you're not. You're doing it to suck up to the cops. You're doing it to suck up to the cops because they're the ones who are going to be protecting your assets on the street, right? That's what it is, isn't it? Don't lie to me, you piece of crap. I hate that, you know? And there should be something that's the same thing we have for politicians, you know? Of course, everybody knows politicians take bribes. Everybody knows that. It's not even a mystery anymore. You know, that's why you're in politics, is to be corrupt. I don't think anybody even wants to get in politics anymore to actually help the nation. I think they all get involved there because they want the power, which is the wrong reason to do it. Maybe, you know, the president of the United States of the future is listening to this broadcast right now. You know, because in theory, apparently, in the United States, anyone can be president. Now, with the theory that anyone can be president, what are the odds? With anyone being able to be president who is born in that country, what are the odds of both a father and a son being elected to office? What are the odds of that? You know, in a totally, truly free and democratic society, what are the odds of a father and son both getting elected to office? And now, you know, my prediction is that Jeb will be the next guy in office. You know, after King George II leaves, we're going to have King Jeb, which, you know, the fact the president of the United States is named Jeb, I'm not going to make a cheap stab at that one, but there it is. You know, Jeb, running the United States. Let me tell you a story about a president named Jeb. Oh, my God. Now, I don't believe that George Bush is of himself an evil man. I don't think he is. I think that perhaps he's so far removed from the rest of the world that he's not really too sure of what the guy on the street is thinking. I mean, and how could he be, realistically? I mean, he's the president of the United States. But in order to have some sort of accurate representation, maybe the guy should, I don't know, maybe get a reality check or something every now and again so he can see just what exactly some of these policies are doing. And, of course, I don't know if you know this, but I unfortunately am pretty much convinced that the entire democratic election process in the United States has been compromised. The last election where Bush got reelected there's never before in history has there ever been a president that has had so much bad press. And there has before in history with a president with so much good press. So with so much resistance, so many people actively campaigning to ditch this president, yet the guy was still elected, that doesn't make sense to me. And plus, with the black box voting system and everything going in, the more the voting system gets computerized, I hate to say it, the less likely it is that we're going to have an accurate setup. I mean, we've already got the guys who wrote the black box programs telling us that they created viruses for the purpose of affecting the vote. You know, how much more smoking gun do you want? But nobody wants to say this. Nobody's talking about it. The voting system in the United States has been compromised. We don't have a democracy anymore. What we have is a sham. We have a fraud. We have a fake. We have a puppet government that was set up by something else. And that's the big question here, is who's really running the show? Because, well, personally, I don't think George is really running the show. So who is? Is it the Bilderberg Group? Is it the secret societies? Are these the groups we call the Illuminatis all this time? Are they the ones running the show? And if so, what do they want? You know, I mean, these are huge questions, which nobody's asking. Instead, we get more and more play-by-play accounts of what's happening with the stock market and this company and that company. And I try to avoid all that, you know? I try to avoid reporting the stories that are on Slashdot because everybody's talking about that. I don't want the stories that are on CNN or on the BBC on the front page because you know what? I think a lot of that is all distraction now. Most of it is distraction. It's all like, look over here, look over here. And we'll hit you with so much different distracting information, you get cut off from the real good stuff. And it's hard. It's hard to find the good stuff. But we all do what we can. In copyright news, and this was sent in by Wyandi, as part of its mounting U.S. rollout of content-enhanced and copy-protected CDs, Sony BMG Music Entertainment. Now, these guys, you know, they make some good tech. I'll give them that. But, man, their software sucks ass. And some of their company policies are just hurting. But Sony BMG Music Entertainment is testing technology solutions that bar consumers from making additional copies of burned CDR discs. Now, listen to this. Since March, the company has released at least 10 commercial titles, more than 1 million discs in total, featuring technology from the UK. Anti-piracy specialist First for Internet that allows consumers to make limited copies of protected discs but blocks users from making copies of the copies. Wow. The concept is known as sterile burning. And in the eyes of Sony BMG executive, the initiative is central to the industry's efforts to curb casual CD burning. Now, I'm just wondering, though, what if you just burn it as an ISO and then you have to burn it from ISO? Because it seems to me that if you physically burn it to a disc, right, that means it's got to travel through a computer, which means that it's got to be taken as an ISO. So if you can burn it from ISO and then the disk won't allow itself to be copied, it doesn't matter because you still got the ISO image. I don't know if there's something around that, but that seems to me the case. The casual piracy, the schoolyard piracy, is a huge issue for us. The schoolyard piracy, that's what they just said. Even though these children are sharing ideas and concepts and communicating with each other, promoting community, and growing as a group, the casual piracy and schoolyard piracy is a huge issue for us, according to Thomas Hess, not related to Herman in any way, president of Global Digital Business for Sony BMG. Two-thirds of all piracy comes from ripping and burning CDs. Dun, dun, dun. Where are you getting your stats from, fuckhead? Which is why making the CD is a secure format is of the utmost importance. That's the utmost importance, is it? Names of the specific titles carrying the technology were not disclosed. Dun, dun, dun. The effort is not specific to First for Internet. Other Sony BMG partners are expected to begin commercial trials of sterile burning within the next month. To date, most copy protection and other digital rights management-based solutions that allow for burning have included secure burning. Now, once this gets, you know, in the mainstay focus, I would say that after saying this, and we get the list of what's got, well, because realistically, anything from Sony, I would just assume has this tech on it. Okay, so if you got anything with Sony BMG, assume that it's got this tech and act accordingly. Now, just from reading the article, I'm thinking, well, what about the ISOs? So that's a way around it. And if not, I would give this thing about 72 hours once it became an issue before it got utterly and completely fucked over by people with more skills than I have. As a matter of fact. And further to that, I don't see a problem with my ISO concept here because you're just kind of freeze-framing the digital information. You should be able to make as many copy disks as possible. So you can make as many sterile copies as you want, and you still are just burning from the ISO. Correct me if I'm wrong here. Now, in Shadowrun news, and this is from Scarred One. Check this one out here. This is something else. The Australian Music Industry's Privacy Investigations Unit. Now, this is Australian Music Industry's Piracy Investigations Unit. I like how they put Investigations Unit on, but it's Australian Music Industries. So it's private. It's nice that it's the Music Industry's Investigations Unit, so it's a corp cop, okay, conducted extensive surveillance of the Sydney North Shore's house owned by the chief executive officer of peer-to-peer provider Shareman Networks, the unit's former boss told the court hearing last week. Okay, so what we got here is you got private corporations espionage units doing surveillance on the head of another company. How cyberpunk / Shadowrun is that? Michael Speck, a representative for the music industry piracy investigations, told a federal court hearing on Tuesday that the anti-piracy unit had been tailing Nikki Hemming's premises on a continuous basis for several months until 11 a.m. on May 24th. Wow. The unit conducted the surveillance as part of its efforts to determine who controlled their peer-to-peer software, Kazaa. The issue is key to the music industry's litigation against Sharma Networks, the association companies and individuals were alleged copyright infringing behavior. So we're going to, like, this wasn't government surveillance here. This is like the equivalency of me starting a company, hiring 10 guys, and going out and doing surveillance on people. Holy shit! I mean, this is just, this is unbelievable to me. And the fact that everyone's like, oh, well, whatever. I mean, so what if you were to discover them or use intrusion countermeasures on them? Or, you know, you're surveilling my house and my dog mauls you because he sees a guy in a ski mask with a shotgun mic. I mean, realistically, am I going to be scolding my dog after that? You got to ask yourself that, okay? Speck said in the interview that personal surveillance of Hemming had been conducted but finished some time ago. Well, we're done now. Well, that makes it okay then. She personally wasn't a subject. Oh, no, not her. Rather, the premises associated with her work. Yeah, we weren't watching her. We were watching her cat. Conducting an investigation on the shadowy organization, hiding behind a veil of secrecy and surveillance, is a normal practice. Can you believe this? He said, this is a normal practice. Conducting an investigation into a shadowy organization, hiding behind a veil of secrecy and surveillance, is a normal practice. First of all, how is that shadowy? They're running a piece of software that you don't happen to agree with, which, by the way, is legal. So there's nothing shadowy about it whatsoever. Nice spin, fuckhead. Speck told Sharman's solicitors that he'd ordered surveillance of the Hemmings premises to stop after finding out where the general manager had moved to. Given the nature of Kazaa, we are conducting a range of investigations aimed at getting to the bottom of who controlled Kazaa. We stopped the surveillance when we confirmed her new address. We're not conducting any surveillance at present, he said. But how can you believe this guy? How can you possibly believe this guy? Because quite obviously, you know, he doesn't have any concern whatsoever for, well, shall we say, telling the truth? He just said that a veil of secrecy and surveillance is normal. None of these people have the ethics to actually have to tell the truth. And if you have private corporations running spy teams, dude, what's next? I mean, what's really left? I mean, I'm going to have to go hit my cyberpunk books again because, wow, this is just out of control. And if that last story about the brain implants didn't get you freaking out, how about this one here from Visage? Giving in gas mask shopping news. Oh, my God. Now, try to imagine you right now, close your eyes and think to yourself, I am a corporate marketing executive. I have no soul. I have tentacles that crawl out of the front of my face, but I hide due to my polymorphing skills. I am a marketing executive. Okay, that's what you need to focus on. I am a marketing executive. Okay, now, once you're thinking that way, imagine you come across this news story. Giving people a whiff of key chemicals can make them more inclined to trust strangers with their cash, a new study reveals. Just 3 puffs of nasal spray containing a hormone called oxytocin, O-X-Y-T-O-C-I-N, oxytocin, increased the chance that people would part with their money, pumping it into the air in Vegas much. The research centered around a game in which an investor player gives part or all of his money on blind trust to an anonymous trustee player who earns interest on the combination of his own money and the invested sum. But the investor is told there's no obligation for the trustee to give the money back at all. They risk losing the money they choose to invest. Michael Cosfield at the University of Zurich, Switzerland, who led the study, found that investors gave away their money far more willingly if they had sniffed oxytocin than if they had sniffed a placebo. But this extra willingness disappeared when the trustee's role was computerized rather than carried out by another human, confirming that the effect was interpersonal and not simply a general willingness to gamble. So that's fine. So you got a guy who uses some kind of strange pheromone technology to take this hormone. He takes some pheromones, throws some of this oxytocin in there, puts some cologne on, and suddenly the boardroom turns into a chemical battlefield? That's a little disturbing to me. Thank you very much. How in the hell did this guy, Michael Cosfield, at the University of Zurich, come up with the idea to study what hormones make people spend money? Who funded that? You know, I really would like to think that technology is being used for better means than to try to get more people trying to come up with more ways to just forcibly farm people to part with their hard-earned cash. You know, it's this particular story here with that. I mean, we're probably not going to hear about this again. But I would really like all you flying monkeys out there to keep a track on this oxytocin stuff, whatever the hell that is, and see where that's going, see who makes it, see who's buying it, see where it's getting sold, see if shopping malls start pumping that shit into their air, because is there any regulation whatsoever about what's in the air inside of these places? Is there any regulation at all? Or has the technology surpassed most of the legislation, and the only place they're worried about is in computers, because that's where it's hurting the industry, right? Your daily hack today is Winamp for iPod. Now, this is a cool little thing that got sent to me here, I think, by Neil Osirith. iPod users are raving about a plugin that makes Winamp Digital Jukebox a better way to manage the iPod than Apple's iTunes, both of which, of course, carry RAM. The plugin called ML iPod allows iPod users to bypass iTunes and manage music collections in Winamp instead. Now, I really like Winamp. I like Winamp as my preferred media player. That doesn't mean that I'm, you know, Sim likes different stuff than I do, but I've always used Winamp. I really like Winamp. It's a great system. The iPod is supposed to work with iTunes only. A new version of the software was released on Monday. There's a link to download it at my LiveJournal site, which, again, is Lead Hacksaw. And that's all I got for you today, but don't worry, I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of Forley, Allen, Druid Weissimeru, Grey Ghost Drake, WebLife, Philip, Peridin, Robert, Jesse, Andrew, Michael, End User, Christopher, Noog, Derek, Joseph, Jesse, Eric, Desert Runner, Steve, Brandon, Jason, Matthew, Mainframe, Peter, Malcolm, Timor, Rosalie, Keith, Matt, Evan, Austin, David, Jonathan, Adam, Richard, Charles, Philip, Jason, Jonathan, Brandon, Host Mojo, Matt, Charles, Matthew, Lars, Eric, Dark Nature, and Brandon. Thank you very much. And the new subscribers this month, very, very cool, were Ed, Jennifer, Palmer, Art, Kevin, Michael, Dennis, Jesse, Matthew, and Jason. Thank you guys for showing up and giving the donations, because every little bit helps. And if you would like to kelp, if you would like some kelp, if you would like me to send you some seaweed, please go to Rant Radio. Now, if you would like to help keep this daily news broadcast on the air, please visit rantmedia.ca and click on the donations tab. Now, rather than read even more names at the end, I'm going to try to read out the names of the people who send me the stories at when I actually read the stories. So that, I think, would speed things up just a little bit. It allows me to get more news stories in there, because that's what it's about. It's about the news. And I'd like to say thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to any sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to Newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. And if you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the album by Deadzy called Commencement. I'm going to leave you now with a track for the FCC by Eric Idle. And I'll be back on Monday, even though I said I would be back tomorrow. But I will, in fact, be back on Monday with my lovely and talented co-host, Samarian, in order to bring you all the news you need. So sorry about that. I just, you know, it's a format, and I keep saying it's the day after tomorrow, but it's not. It's going to be on Monday. So, again, Eric Idle, for those of you who are unfamiliar with Eric Idle, because most of you are probably quite young, there was a group once upon a time called Monty Python, and they were holy. Eric Idle is one of the great gods of our time, okay? The guy is just amazing. And when I came across this, I gotta say, this one little tiny ditty of a tune just brought a tear to my eye. I was so happy to hear from this guy. It's great. So Eric Idle's little note to the FCC. And until tomorrow, that's what Server said. End of line.
Here's a little number I wrote the other day while out duck hunting with a judge.
Quack.
Fuck you very much, the FCC. Fuck you very much for fining me. $5,000 a fuck, so I'm really out of luck. That's more than Heidi Fleiss was charging me. So fuck you very much, the FCC. For proving that free speech just isn't free. Clear Channel's a dear channel, so Howard Stern must go. Attorney General Ashcroft doesn't like strong words, and so he's charging twice as much as all the drugs for Rush Limbaugh. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you very much, dear Mr. Bush, for heroically sitting on your tush. For Halliburton, Enron, all the companies who fail. Let's send them a clear signal and stick Martha straight in jail. She's an uppity rich bitch, and at least she isn't male. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you, dickhead Mr. Cheney too. Fuck you and fuck everything you do. Your pacemaker must be a fake. You haven't got a heart. As far as I'm concerned, you're just a pasty-faced old fart. And as for Condoleezza, she's an intellectual tart. So fuck you all so very much. So fuck you very much, the EPA, for giving all Alaska's oil away. It really is a bummer when I can't fill my Hummer. The ozone's a no-go zone now that Arnold's here to say
the nuclear winter games are going to take place in L.A.
So fuck you all so very much. So what, the planet fails? Let's save the great white males and fuck you all so very much.